And that's coming up later after the news. Now though, on BBC Blackburn, it's our movie premiere feature, starring David Bentley. This is The Invisible Man. Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast on arsblog.com in association, as always, with oleole.com, the football community website. Coming up on this week's Arscast, we have got for you a blog chat with Amy Lawrence from The Observer. As well as that, we'll be talking to Arsblog former Teo, who has been in Ghana covering the African Cup of Nations for oleole.com. He was there right to the death, and we'll be talking to him very briefly about the emergence of Alex Song during that tournament. The man in the bar is here, Eboué is here, what else is there? I don't know. Other stuff, possibly. I always say this every week, there's other stuff and there never is. So I don't know why I keep saying it. I don't know why you keep listening to it. As Homer says, it takes two to lie, one to lie, and one to listen. This is true. Does my voice seem deeper than usual today? It sounds deeper in my headphones. I don't know why that would be. Perhaps I'm going through a second puberty or something, which would not be good. No beer of the week this week, no wine of the week. I have a little Jameson's of the week, though, but no ice in it, so you can't hear it. There it is. That's me tapping it with my pencil. It's Bernie. I do like it. So now, what's happened since the last Arscast? Well, good things have happened. Last weekend was a tremendous weekend for Arsenal, a great weekend of football for us. Not a great weekend in terms of football watching. I watched Manchester United get beaten at home by Manchester City on Sunday, and that was quite good. Wasn't much of a game, though, but it was nothing compared to the shitfest that was Chelsea versus Liverpool, the late game on Sunday afternoon. It was just the worst game of football. It really was. Terrible. These are two supposedly top four teams, full of world-class players, apparently, and it was shite, absolutely fucking muck, horrible to watch. A 0-0 draw is the way it turned out, which meant Chelsea dropped points, Liverpool, of course, being well out of the title race at this stage, so that meant that if Arsenal were to beat Blackburn Rovers on Monday night, we would go 8 points clear of Chelsea and 5 points clear of Manchester United. Wasn't going to be easy, though, because we had a lot of players missing. We had Kolo out, Eboué out, Van Persie out, Rosicki out, Diaby, Theo Walcott was out. And all we heard in the press was that this was an understrength Blackburn side. They were missing Christopher Samba and some other guy, and the press are talking about how difficult it was for Blackburn. Get the fuck. Seriously, anyway. Nerves were settled early on in the game when Philippe Senderos got his second goal of the season, and I do love goals like that, from corners. Big, thundering centre-half headers. They're fantastic. Friedel didn't even move. Friedel did have a very good game, though. Made some saves, and sort of looking back on the game, it's easy to see that he was much busier than I thought he was during the game. During the game, I didn't think we were doing that much or creating that much. When you look back on it, he was busy enough, wasn't he? He couldn't do anything about Adebayor scoring his 7 billionth goal of the season late on. So that meant all 3 points were ours, and that nice gap that we were all hoping for at the top of the table was opened up. Now, I didn't realise, it was only when he said it afterwards, that there's only 12 games of the season left. It doesn't seem like an awful lot. It's not really an awful lot. There's plenty of time for things to go right or plenty of time for things to go wrong. So it would be wrong, I think, for people to start counting any chickens. We've been in this position before and we've seen how quickly a 5-point lead can be overturned. It happened this season to us as well. So there's no point getting cocky and getting carried away, and I'm sure Arsene Wenger will be keeping the players' feet firmly on the ground. We don't want another situation. Could you imagine another situation like the end of the season in, was it the 03-04? That was horrible. That game up at Bolton, oh, still gives me nightmares. So we don't want anything like that to happen again. But it is a nice position to be in. I would much rather be 5 points clear of United than 5 points behind United. it does give a bit of pressure on us, but it also puts pressure on them. You see, they have to pick up points. They can't drop any more points because they know that if we keep winning, then that gap is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So, all in all, you have to say, a very, very enjoyable weekend's football. With me now, then, to talk about our position at the top of the league, how we've been doing, coping with absences through injuries and African Cup of Nations, and, of course, looking ahead to the weekend game against Manchester United and next week's Champions League game against AC Milan, is sometime Observer writer Amy Lawrence. Hi, Amy.
How are you?
Very well, thank you very much. Now, we're 5 points clear at the top of the league from Manchester United, 8 points clear of Chelsea. Is this anything you could possibly have hoped for at the start of the season, or that Arsenal fans could have expected?
Well, I mean, even to have hoped of it a few weeks ago after the Birmingham game, I think is quite a moot point, because I think there were a lot of people that thought, here we go, here comes the slide, Man United won't lose another game, and the moment has passed. You know, I think there has been a feeling that this season has been a real crest of a wave all year long, partly because it was so unexpected. And I suppose the sceptics and the pessimists have been waiting for it to all go horribly wrong. So I think that Birmingham game made people feel quite depressed, because it seemed like such a stupid 2 points to throw away, and it seeded top spot. And to have regained it so quickly and so emphatically and gone from a point behind to 5 points ahead in such a short space of time, has been a massive confidence booster. But by the same token, shows you how quickly it can all change. So I think it's really important everybody stays calm, focused, and all that kind of nonsense that managers always talk about. But you know that it can change around quickly again. So it's just got to be game by game. But with 12 games to go, and suddenly, you know, that end is in sight, and you've got to say, at this position, it's only Arsenal to throw away, which adds a completely new type of pressure onto it. But the good thing is, this team are so young and so hungry, they seem not to really feel that pressure.
There is this hunger within the team that we've seen from players like Cleb, Fabregas, for example, that this will be their first big title with Arsenal.
Well, for a lot of them, their first big title, period.
Yeah. Is that a big factor in, for example, the improvement that we've seen from some of these players this season as opposed to last season?
For sure. I mean, I think when you're at a big club, and let's face it, for the top four in England, every season the expectation from their own supporters, and to an extent, you know, the media and so on, is that can they win the league or not? And you're there to be shot at if you can't, and you're not close. And these players have experienced how bad that feels when you don't meet up to expectations in the last couple of seasons. And they've had some pretty fierce stuff. Admittedly, they haven't had it from the fans, which is a good thing, because everybody's been quite patient from that point of view and been prepared to let Arsene work his magic and build up this new team. But I don't think anybody expected it, even by Arsene standards, to happen so quickly. I think probably most of the fans would have been prepared to give it another year or so before it was real title contention time. But I think the way that the individuals in the team has improved has been amazing, but it's also partly possibly to do with the fact that there are obviously very strong friendships in this team. And I think in modern football that's increasingly unusual, because, you know, that they do all have much more separate lives than they once did. It's not like the days of Frank McClintock, or even, you know, fast-forwarding 10, 20 years to the sort of Brady, O'Leary, Stapleton, Ricks generation, and even going forward to the Michael Thomas, Alan Smith, Steve Bould, Lee Dixon, etc. generation, where the guys in the team were real friends and they socialised together all the time, and they went out and they went round each other's houses and they made jokes all day long at the training ground. And there was a period, I think relatively recently, because of all the money in the game and because of the sort of superstar, rock star factor, where they all, you know, on a slightly different, they live a funny kind of life now. They weren't so friendly. People would come and do their work, go to a job at the training ground, kick the football around and get physically fit and have some lunch and go home. But this team, partly because I think they're all quite young, quite a lot of them I think are still single, they don't go out on the town all the time, because they're not those kind of guys, and I don't think Arsene would tolerate much of that. But they really enjoy each other's company. And you can see the way that they behave on the pitch with each other. And I'm feeling it's probably quite like that off the pitch when they're together. And I think when you're looking around at guys that you love as friends, you really want to give everything you've got. And they're all giving it collectively and individually.
Cool. They all love each other. That's brilliant.
Yeah, big love in it.
Oh, cool. Have you been a bit surprised? Because we've had our injuries along the way and we've had absences. Van Persie's been out for a long time. Kolo has been out. We've had Rosicki in and out of the team, etc., etc. Against Blackburn on Monday night, we had loads of players missing. We've seemed more able to cope with that sort of thing this year.
Well, that's been a feature of all the title-winning teams under Wenger. I mean, if you think back to 98 double, Bergkamp, who was player of the year that year, got cropped towards the end of the season and wasn't able to play in the run-in or in the cup final. And, you know, Anelka came in and nobody really felt the damage of that loss. When Robert Pires did his cruciate and Ray Parlour and Freddie, there was a switching of sides, and were phenomenal taking up that baton that Pires, I think, was also player of the year that year. Yeah. So if you're going to win things, you're going to have to withstand injuries. So what's been probably surprising is that I think a lot of people looked at the squad, myself included, and thought that it wasn't strong enough to cope with injuries. And particularly up front, where when you look at the fact that Arsenal are top scorers at the moment in the Premier League, and obviously a lot of the credit to that has gone to Adebayor, who's shouldered a lot of that burden. But the goals have been spread around throughout the season. And, you know, it was nice to see Sendros chip in the other day with one. And obviously Fabregas had his purple patch. Galas has scored some important goals. Hled scored some goals. Rosicki chips in with a few. It's like a very interesting scenario, because Adebayor seems to score a lot of goals, but he doesn't really have a proper partner. I mean, the same way that when Henry was here, everybody said, well, it was Henry and the rest of them kind of worked around him. But it's only recently that Adebayor and Eduardo look like they're forging a kind of proper partnership together. But the first, you know, 5-6 months of the season, it's been Adebayor with a bit of Van Persie, a bit of Bentner, a bit of Walcott, a bit of Eduardo when he was settling in and, you know, was half invisible, really. So I think well played to everybody for managing to maintain very good run of goal scoring when there's really been one reliable centre forward for the season so far.
All right. Looking ahead then, we've got two really big games coming up. United, always traditionally a very big game, but it's the FA Cup, and following that game is AC Milan at home in the Champions League. What sort of a team do you reckon that Arsene Wenger is going to pick for the game on Saturday?
Ask yourself this. If you're a fan or a player or anybody and you say, oh, there's two big games coming up, Man United in the FA Cup and AC Milan in the Champions League, well, that first game does suddenly pale into a bit of insignificance. Not insignificance, but, you know, the real mouth, your mouth starts to water when you think of the AC Milan Champions League game. You're never going to have a game against Man United that is without a little bit of heat, given the history of the last 20 years between the two teams. But where this will differ from, say, perhaps the cup games against Tottenham recently, is that was so obviously the be-all and end-all of Tottenham's season, whereas for both Arsenal and Man United, I think they're aware that the FA Cup game, yes, it'll be nice, you want to win and you want to go through, but no big deal if you don't. Because it's much more important to, you know, to have everybody fresh and fit and on as good a form as possible for the Champions League. And that same thing goes for Man United as it does for Arsenal. So I would expect both teams to be weakened. I mean, anyway, Arsenal prefers to treat the FA Cup with only a little bit more power than the Carling Cup. And let's face it, in the last few years, whatever sort of strength of team he's put out, it's tended to be enough against most teams. So I would expect him to try and rest as many players as he can sort of realistically get away with, which is hard given the injury situation. But and I think probably Ferguson will do similar, although he tends to play slightly stronger teams in the FA Cup. So I guess everybody will not put too much on it, as long as it doesn't end up a draw, which will cheese off both teams.
Indeed. And then AC Milan. Are you looking forward to this one? Are you confident that this is a game or a two-legged tie that we can come through?
Massively looking forward to it. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for AC Milan, going back to the great teams that won the European Cup with Van Basten and Baresi, and what a magnificent team. I just think the Milan team of now, maybe there's some sort of echoes of when Arsenal played Real Madrid a couple of years ago, where a wonderful name, you know, a fantastic stadium, a real glamorous classic that, you know, you're looking forward to. But at the moment, it feels like Arsenal are a bit on the up and Milan are a bit on the slide, although they've obviously still got some really fantastic young players to call upon as well. I would fancy Arsenal to go through, actually, but I think the one thing the two things to factor in is that it's coming in the middle of a season where the team are going for the league as well, and it's hard to do both, as everybody knows. Yeah. And two, this team is so very young, and there are so few experienced players that we don't know what kind of situation we're going to find over the two legs, and there will be pressure, one imagines, at some stage of it. And might some players get a bit overawed, freeze a little bit? You don't know, because it's a bit of the unknown for quite a lot of these guys. So my instinct would be I fancy Arsenal to go through, but it could be close. But very exciting. I mean, in many ways, this is the biggest European Cup game Arsenal have had since the final, because in a way last year was not that exciting because the group stage was the group stage, and then PSV was obviously one to forget.
All right, Amy, we better leave it there. Thanks a million for talking to the Arscast again. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll do. All the best.
Thank you very much to Amy, and she'll be back on another Arscast in the very near future, no doubt. Now, before we move on to other things, you know the Arscast is interactive, right? You can leave messages, you can send emails and all that kind of stuff. But there are ways that you can actually contribute audio to the Arscast. One way is to dial up a number. It's a voicemail. It's a UK number. You can ring up any time and leave comments or suggestions or call me names, whatever you like. Or there's a thing on the Arsblog homepage. If you click on the podcasts link at the top, on the navigation bar at the top of the site, you go through to the page which tells you all about the Arscast, and there's a little link there to a thing which lets you record through your computer. And we did have a few people who used it in the past. Those of you with long memories will remember Igor the Brute. Oh, I miss Igor a bit. But you can leave your message. We haven't had one for, I don't know, I can't remember the last time. I think Igor was probably the last one. But one came in last night. And have a listen to this.
Hello there. Nice to see you. To see you nice, Osblogger. Just wanted to say, really appreciate your program. And just want to say, keep up the good work. And I'd love to be on your program one day. Maybe you could give me an email or something like that. Because I'd love to come on your show. Because I think your show is fucking marvellous. Sure I do. And if you'd like to have me on your show, talking anything bollocks about Arsenal, why not give me an email and I'll come on and talk even more bollocks than you do.
So there I was listening to that last night, as I was recording, and thinking, that is the worst Irish accent I've ever heard. It's less convincing than Tom Cruise in Far and Away. And as everybody knows, that's by far the worst Irish accent ever to be recorded on the silver screen. And then I was thinking, hang on a second, he's asking me to email him, but he doesn't leave an email address. He must be Irish after all. Speaking of Irish men, here's one of the greatest. It is the man in the bar with another player history.
Ah, hello, and verily tis Yeoman Arsblog. Sit thee down here, my old chumley, and partake from a tankard of ale, for now I shall inform thee of a story of a great player from the past. Do you like that? That's how we'd be introducing this old thing if it was in the medieval days and stuff. if they had medieval internet. Can you imagine? It'd be great to be on comelylasses.com and www.booksomewenches.net. That's what it'd be all about, you see. Anyway, today I'm going to tell you about possibly the greatest Arsenal player of all time. Having survived the terrible threat that was the Millennium Bug, he joined Arsenal in the year 2000 for £6 million from the club they call Marseille, or Marseille, I think it might be. His name, of course, was Robert Pires, and he came in to replace that old fella Mark Overmars, little short-arse Dutch lad who scored a lot of goals on the wing. And initially people thought, this old French fella with his lovely hair and his rather dashing facial hair, he's not going to cut it in the old Premiership, you see, because it's too physical and he doesn't like that. But those people, like the people that launched the career of Amy Winehouse, were terribly, terribly wrong, because he began to score goals here, there and everywhere. In the old Champions League, he scored a great goal against Lazio, and he sparked off a tremendous habit of scoring against Tottenham Hotspur. Every time he played against them, he scored. Even when he didn't play, he still scored. That's how much he scored against Spurs. In the season 2001-2002, he was possibly the greatest player the world has ever seen. Do you remember that goal against Aston Villa? He took the long ball from Freddie. He lobbed it over the head of George Boateng. And then Peter Schmeichel, the big old red-nosed cunt himself, was standing more or less on his line. But Pires still chipped him. Oh, it was a marvellous goal. I swear to God, if I wasn't impotent, I'd have come all down my own leg. Sadly, that season was cut short for him by an old cruciate ligament injury. Doesn't seem fair that men so handsome and brilliant as Robert Pires get cruciate ligament injuries. Why, Robbie Savage has played more or less injury-free his whole career. Where is the justice, I ask you? He went on to score loads of goals for Arsenal. Do you remember that one against Liverpool? Oh, Jesus, the winning goal in the FA Cup final. And let's not forget that this is a man that slapped Dennis Wise in the face. How could you not love him? Especially with that hair and that facial hair. Oh, Jesus Christ, he was a man you could fall for if you were that way inclined. Or even if you weren't. Not that I'm saying anything, but anyway, his old Arsenal career finished on a bit of a low in the Champions League final in Paris. When Jens Lehmann got sent off, it was Robert Pires that was called ashore for the last time. I'm tearing up a bit here, even just thinking about it. Nowadays, he's in Spain having a good old time eating paella and shuffling around the pitch for Villarreal. But you see, I miss Robert Pires.
The man in the bar will return with another player history on next week's Arscast. Poor old fella, he really does miss Robert Pires, you know. 72 years of age he is. When I go down to the bar, he's there with his Arsenal shirt on. Pires, 7, on the back. And even though he's as bald as an egg, he sports an impeccable Robert Pires chin stripe. It's as white can be. But that's his little bit to remind him of his favourite Arsenal player of all time. He was nearly crying as well. Poor old guy. I had to let him buy me a pint then. It cheers him up. So I can't refuse. I can't refuse. Now, if you've been living under a rock, you won't know anything about the African Cup of Nations. Got that wrong, didn't I? You're supposed to say, unless you've been living under a rock. But if you have been living under a rock, welcome back. I'm sure it's far less damp and there are many less of those little armadillo things that live in dark, damp places under rocks and under bits of wood. But the point I was trying to make was about the African Cup of Nations, you see. And we all knew about Kolo and Ebuwe.
Now it's time to be at home with Emmanuel Ebuwe. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to my home. I am Ebuwe. Ebuwe like word that begin with B. Top 3 Ebuwe word that begin with B. Number 1. Bootylicious. Ebuwe want to bang Beyonce. Number 2, Brontosaurus. Boy, do good impression of Brontosaurus.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Nobody no difference. Number 3, a boy word that begin with B. Bulbiferous. A boy like bulb, but not screwing bulb. Only bayonet cap. You go now.
Tune in next week for more At Home with Eboué. Oh, baby.
Before they went over, but Alex Song, having been called up to the Cameroon squad for the first time and having never really convinced too many Arsenal fans he was the real deal, seems to have had a very good tournament. So to talk a little bit about him is Teo Pelizzeri, who's been covering the African Cup of Nations for OleOle.com. Hello, Teo.
Hello. Can I just say hello from beautiful Ghana, where Arsenal has won 4 games from 4 while I've been here, and I think we only conceded 1 goal. Maybe I should stay.
Yes, I think you should. If you're what's doing it, then I think you should, whether you like it or not. I want to talk to you about Alex Song, because all the focus before the African Cup of Nations was obviously on Kolo Touré and Emmanuel Eboué, established names, established stars. And Alex Song is a man who hasn't really convinced too many Arsenal fans of his worth up to this point in time. This season, he's had some good performances in the Carling Cup, but even still, he was one of those names. He seems to have come of age in this tournament.
Absolutely, he has. I would have to agree. And I was definitely one of those fans who thought he just didn't have the confidence or belief to cut it, as well as the on-field presence. He really did seem to shrink away from the contest and not really put his body on the line. Well, it was total opposite at this tournament. He was everywhere, fantastic in the air, good on the ground, picked up an assist with a very nice cross at one stage, and it really was quite frustrating, and ultimately, I would say, for Alex Song, a tragedy that he was injured in training before the final and was substituted out after 15 minutes. I watched him very closely during the warm-up, and I actually got a picture of him leaning down to his heavily bandaged right knee, and he really was feeling it. Otto Pfister still had the guts to start him, and it didn't pay off. He had to get substituted after 15 minutes, and it just didn't work out. It was a sad end to what was otherwise a tournament where, I would have to agree, he did come of age.
He was picked, I believe, in the team of the tournament as well.
Yeah, interesting selection. I left him out of my team of the tournament purely based on the performances in the final, but I think he was deserving of a spot, really. He was subbed on at 3-0 down at halftime to Egypt in the opening group match, really on a hiding to nothing, and his performance there convinced Coach Pfister that he was capable at this level. And after the semi-final win over Cameroon, where Song was man of the match, Otto Pfister said that he was a wonder and he couldn't believe the way his player had come on, and obviously he was glowing with praise for all his players, but he did single out Alex Song as one player in particular who had grown in stature and really become a key part of his team.
Okay, Teo, if you want to check out his African Cup of Nations team of the season, just click onto www.oleole.com. You'll find all the banners, all the information on the homepage there. Teo, thanks a million for talking to us and safe trip back home.
Pleasure, come on you Reds.
So there you go, Alex Song, superstar. Who'd have thunk it, eh? And if you want to hear a more in-depth talk with Teo about the African Cup of Nations and the final and his thoughts on the tournament as a whole, check out the podcast on oleole.com. That's me and the Mug Smasher. It's called The Week in Football. Alex Song, though, it'll be interesting to see if he has any kind of a role to play between now and the end of the season, having come back full of confidence, although slightly crippled. Just another one to add to the big pile of injured players that we have. Speaking of the run into the season, we've got Manchester United on Saturday, and of course, playing against Manchester United, you always want to win. It's in the FA Cup, and the FA Cup is a tournament that I love. Some of my favourite Arsenal memories have come in the FA Cup, but I have to say, this time around, it's something that I would be willing not to sacrifice, but if we lose to Manchester United on Saturday, provided it's nothing too traumatic or heartbreaking, then I don't think I'm going to be too despondent. I think the focus this season has to be on the league. Over the 38 games, if we can prove ourselves to be the best team, then that's going to go a long way to make this team more competitive in the years to come and provide them with more confidence and more experience, obviously, for more league titles and then possibly Champions League titles. Now, of course, if we beat Manchester United, all well and good. That'll be fantastic. But I have to agree with Amy. I think it's going to be, injuries permitting, a fairly weakened team against United, because the focus will be on the game against AC Milan, which is going to be a cracker as well. I think we do need to get something from the home leg. We need to go to Milan with a lead and hopefully a clean sheet if we want to go through there. But, you know, we're a young team. And they're sort of an old team, and I like the parallel that Amy drew between the Real Madrid game and this game. We're hungry for titles. AC Milan, though, because they're doing so poorly in the league, will probably have as much focus on the Champions League as anything else. So it is going to be an absolute cracker of a game, and I suppose that's what being at the top of football is all about, to play the best teams. They are the reigning champions, and it'd be a huge feather in our cap if we could beat them. So there you go, it's all going to be very exciting, isn't it? This weekend, and then next week, and so much football, and then the countdown to the title. I'm beginning to sweat here. So I am. So I think that's probably as good a time as any to call this Arsecast quits. Have yourselves a very good weekend. Enjoy the game on Saturday. Remember, perspective is needed here. The FA Cup is third on our list of priorities, and, you know, whatever happens, they'll still be fucking cunts, and we won't. Remember that. Talk to you all next week on the blog, and of course on next week's Arsecast. Take it easy. Bye bye.
International Airport. Cock off. Cunt.